Thanks very much, Oliver. Yeah, can we turn down the lights again?
Dim the light.
And you can introduce yourself.
Hi. Good afternoon. Yeah, actually, just I lost my focus slightly because I was so interested in what the previous two speakers had to say, which is a sort of rare, well, for me at least, a rare experience when you're sort of lining up to speak at one of these events. But certainly, a lot of what Diarmaid was saying, but also what Conal was saying, sort of resonates very strongly with my personal experience, but also more at a political level, what's happening in the UK. And I mean, I have to say, it was music to my ears to see this sort of, or to hear this sort of mea culpa on, we've lost sight of the basics, we've forgotten what works, so much money has sort of flown into the system and a lot of goods come of that, but also we've seen distortions which have meant in some regards and in some sectors we've really lost our way. What was this? Let me just open this up. So, just by way of introduction, my name is Oliver Cumming. I work at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, which is a university sort of dedicated to public health based in London, with very much a global health or an international focus. I was here 2 years ago, and I was working for an NGO at that time called WaterAid. And sort of sitting here, I couldn't help sort of draw the comparison. And very interestingly, sort of talking on the sanitation, 2 years ago, the UN told us that 2.4 billion people lacked access to sanitation. So 2 years on from that, the UN is now telling us that 2.6 billion people lack access to sanitation. So I'm sorry to say that we haven't really seen a great deal in the way of progress in numbers, in coverage. However, I do think we have seen significant progress in other areas, and we'll come on to that. So, Conal showed us some photographs from Bangladesh. This is a photograph from Dhaka in Bangladesh. And for me, it really sort of it conveys the scale of the issue here. It conveys the global scale, but also conveys the scale down to the individual, to two or three children standing in the middle of this, the risks that poor sanitation, inadequate water supply, bad sanitation presents to the well-being, to the health, to the educational prospects of a child. So the numbers, 2.6 billion people without toilets. That number's getting bigger, as I said. But bizarrely, we also have toilets without people. We have toilets which have been built, which are not being used. So just take a quick preliminary glance behind these numbers. What does this 2.6 billion equate to in terms of human development? 20% of child deaths. The I hope some of you at least have picked up the PLOS Medicine series, which was published at the end of last year on water sanitation hygiene, which was for me a real real success that a medical journal decided to run a series on water sanitation and hygiene, because it is generally not perceived as a health issue. It's perceived as an environmental issue, or as an infrastructure issue, or even, as Diarmaid touched on, as an agricultural issue. But yeah, 20% of child deaths related to poor water sanitation and hygiene. Millions of school days lost. The UN estimated 470 million a year. And in 2008, the World Bank estimated, on the basis of some really quite rigorous work in three or four countries in Asia and in South Asia and Africa, that up to 9% of developing country GDP was being lost due to a failure to expand access to water and sanitation. What I'd like to emphasize here is that this is a crisis which is characterized by gross inequity. SHARE, which I haven't really introduced, is a research program consortium made up of five organizations led by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. SHARE stands for, slightly contrived, but sanitation and hygiene applied research for equity. And I read that out now because I'm going to touch on this issue of equity in the next couple of slides. The organisations that make up SHARE, unusually for a research programme, are not just universities or research institutes, but also implementing agencies. So we have WaterAid, a sort of leading international NGO in the water sector. But we also have an organisation called Slum Dwellers International, which is an organisation made up of groups of slum dwellers, women's self-help groups, that have mobilised over the last 2 to 3 decades, then federated at a national level, and they're now federated at a global level and have a secretariat in South Africa. The interesting thing is, I mean, these are the people who lack access to sanitation, hygiene, safe drinking water. And then finally, we do have, you know, Conal touched on it, we have the capacity, we have the types of organisations that can deliver top-end, rigorous, state-of-the-art science on these issues. So we have the London School, we have the International Centre for Diarrheal Disease Research in Bangladesh, and we have more on the sort of policy and also the environment side, the International Institute for Environment and Development. So in terms of inequity, this is a photograph taken in Mumbai. On your left-hand side, you'll see a slum, incredibly high sort of population density, and then across this dual carriageway, you have one of the more affluent areas of Mumbai. Child mortality rates on the 10 metres to the right of the road are 160 per 1,000 live births. Child mortality on the left of the road is 9 child deaths per 1,000 live births. This is all in the space of 100 metres, a kilometre. So let's just remind ourselves, diarrhoea kills predominantly kills poor children. 90% of the deaths are children, and the majority of those are poor children. So that's not just children in poor countries, it's poor children living in poor countries. The majority of people, over two-thirds, who do not have access to sanitation live on less than $2 a day. And let's just remind ourselves, because we're going to talk a bit about priorities for the health community and for, in terms of international development. The focus of the Millennium Development Goals, the focus of, at the national level, poverty reduction strategy papers, and this, you know, is an obvious point, is tackling poverty. It's reaching the poorest. It's reaching the people who are dying from diarrhea, and it's reaching the people who live on less than $2 a day and don't have a toilet. And the reason I flag this is because if we take a look behind the numbers, we know 2.6 billion people lack access to sanitation. We also know it's the most off-track MDG target in sub-Saharan Africa. But particularly interesting is if you look more closely at progress and you disaggregate by wealth quintile. So if you sort of bear with me so I can sort of explain what we're looking at here. The cluster of bars over here is India. The cluster of bars over here is Bangladesh. And for each bar, we're looking at progress. So the green section here shows progress from the baseline of the MDGs in 1990 to the last sort of data point for the UN's report on water sanitation, which is 2008. And it shows improvement in access within that wealth quintile. So if we look at Bangladesh, we're seeing a very similar gradient of progress across the wealth quintiles, from the poorest through to the richest. Obviously, the richest, I mean, we have a much lesser gradient, as you would expect, because the majority of people in the richest quintile have access to sanitation. By comparison, if you look across at India, the progress in the bottom wealth quintile, so the 200 million poorest Indian citizens, have seen practically no improvements in access for the duration of the Millennium Development Goals. And it's only when we move to wealth quintile 4, which if there are any economists in the room, sort of equates to the expanding middle classes in India, that's where we're seeing the progress. So in terms of the promise of the Millennium Development Goals, the promise of international development, we see very different pictures in different sort of national settings. This is unpublished, so I'm not going to give it to you, but you can't cite it. And it should have been published last year for the Millennium Development Goal Summit in New York, but I won't say which one, but one of these governments vetoed its publication in a UN report if it was to be put alongside the other one. Say no more. Now, it says we're looking top level. I mean, there's a limited usefulness for figures like 2.6 billion. Let's take a closer look at the science. Let's look at the epidemiology. As far as I'm aware, the most rigorous study that's been done of the effect of sanitation on health, the effect of sanitation on diarrhea, which is usually the primary health outcome which is measured, was a longitudinal cohort study conducted in a city in Brazil. Data was collected for the 10 years of this citywide sanitation program that took the city from 20% coverage to 95% coverage. And we saw dramatic effects on diarrhea. These are risk reductions. And you know, for epidemiologists in the room, I apologize, but just to kind of communicate what we're actually looking at here in simple terms, this is the line that we want to look at. So this is the effect that was seen in the data when we'd adjusted for baseline, for the baseline situation, and for the various confounding factors. Across the city, we saw a 22% reduction in diarrheal prevalence. Now, that was across the city. So go back to those wealth quintiles. Across all five quintiles, we saw a 22% reduction on average. However, if you look, let's take a slightly closer look at the areas with the highest baseline risk, which were the poorest 50%, you see an almost 50% reduction in diarrhea, which is dramatic. For those of you, you know, who sort of spend time looking at sort of epidemiological papers, this is really, really astounding. And the interesting thing for a policymaker is, in essence, the return, the health return, the social return, was double for the poorest people. If you can get your money, if you can get your aid to the poorest, the return in health improvements will be double from this experience. So the big question working on a research program, which I always come up against, is, so what's the point of research? Do we need research? Surely we just need to get out there, we need to sink bore wells, we need to get people to invest in sanitation, we need to get people washing their hands. And I think as Connell alluded to, it's not that simple. And there is a very important role for research and for knowledge. And I just want to highlight sort of two fundamental points for the SHARE consortium. So we seek to provide rigorous and relevant research, relevant to challenges on the ground, by which we mean we want to provide research that can improve the performance of the sector. We can see better results for the money that we're putting in. But really, we're seeking to provide the basis to answer two questions for important decision makers. And for me, in my experience in the world of policy, these are the only two important questions for a policymaker. Why invest in sanitation, and how do I invest at scale in sanitation? And a lot of that was sort of touched upon by Dermot in terms of some of the challenges of sort of moving to sort of sector support, budgetary support. So I'm just going to, I think I'm probably running slightly over. Should I speed up? There are three things that we try to do with our research. We want to characterize the problems in a scientifically rigorous way so that others can address them seriously. We want to identify and test solutions so that others can implement them. And then finally, we want to demonstrate and measure the benefits so that others can prioritize them. I'm going to flip through that. Don't we know all of this already? I mean, Dermot's sitting here. Presumably, you write checks, or at least you whisper in the ears of people who do write checks. You maybe think, don't we already know this? Don't we know that sanitation is good for health? Don't we know how how to do it. Yes, there are things that we know. We know enough now to do a hell of a lot of good on water sanitation and hygiene, but there are enduring questions, and particularly with the increasing focus on important, on gold standard evidence, there are tricky, difficult questions that the sector needs to be able to answer. And part of the reason that we don't have the evidence is because historically the sector has been underinvested in, and that is as manifest in the research as it is in the programme sites. One of the reasons we don't have a randomised control trial on sanitation is because nobody would write a cheque to do the research. But as an epidemiologist, we cannot definitively answer this first question. Do televisions reduce diarrhoea? So all of the evidence that we have does not address the fundamental epidemiological challenge of confounding. Because we cannot say, because we've not conducted a randomised control trial, that we have eliminated confounding. So if we went to Mumbai and we asked the people sitting on the right of the road in the slum, how many of you have toilets? And then we asked the same questions to people living in the very affluent area, and then we looked at our child mortality rates, we would find the most incredibly strong association between toilets and reductions in diarrhea or improvements in child health. We all know toilets don't reduce diarrhea, but if you're having a discussion with a scientist, or you're having a discussion with a policymaker or a politician who has a scientist next to him, you need to be able to answer some of these questions, or defend some of these questions. We still don't know what is the effect of sanitation versus water. All of the studies which have been done combine those interventions. Now, I find in my work, you don't have to defend water, but you do have to make the case for sanitation. And one of the immediate kickbacks for people who understand the literature is, you do not know what the additive value of sanitation is versus water, or indeed versus hygiene. And it is highly complex. We still don't understand the relationship between access to a toilet, the amount of times you use the toilet, and the health outcome. This is a highly complex sort of system. If 80% of people in a village have access, 60% of the people have access, use the toilet some of the time, what does that mean in health terms? That's why it's difficult to measure versus stick a needle in the arm of a child twice and they're, 60% of the time they're immune. These are highly complex scientific issues. So some of the things that we will be doing, we will be addressing this fundamental gap. We will be conducting a randomised control trial on the effect of sanitation on diarrheal morbidity and mortality in children. The trial will be conducted in India. It's a real-life intervention. It's run by with the support of an NGO. It's an Indian government program which runs across India. So the findings are instantly generalizable to the scale of a billion in the Indian context. We're compiling a systematic review of the effect of sanitation and hygiene on childhood nutritional status, which many people have alluded to. And there are some really, really exciting developments in the science on this. We've known for a long time that repeated bouts of diarrhea cause childhood undernutrition. We've known also that helminth infections, parasites which are associated with poor sanitation, impact childhood nutrition. And there is now very exciting work on sort of subclinical gut conditions which potentially have a huge effect on nutritional status of children. There's a nutritionist, and I put store in this because it's a nutritionist, it's not a sanitation zealot, nutritionist who's worked for 3 decades on nutrition, who has compiled an incredibly comprehensive review of the literature and has found no rigorous evidence of a nutrition intervention, a food-based nutrition intervention, ever delivering more than a 60% normalization of childhood nutritional status. So the very best you can do with food alone is 60%, which is pretty good, but it's not 100%. And she is now convinced, after 3 decades of work on nutrition and food, that sanitation is the answer, and is running a large trial in Zimbabwe on this as we speak. I'm going to jump through some of these. Menstrual hygiene management is an issue we can hopefully touch on in terms of gender and equity, but we know this is a hugely important issue, particularly for teenage girls in developing countries, which is not spoken about at the global health level nor at the national policy level. I'm going to jump there. I just sort of sum up three messages which I've taken directly from the PLOS series. We need more research, but what we know now is inadequate wash accounts for 1/5 of all child deaths in the world. Existing wash interventions, so what we know already works, are cost effective. Washing your hands with soap, according to the World Bank, is the single most cost-effective health intervention we know. $3.50 a dally. And sanitation promotion at $10 a dally is still significantly cheaper than bed nets or vaccines or any of the other many of the other health interventions that we think of as being cost-effective. And finally, we know that despite the first two points, progress in ensuring access to these basic services has been woefully inadequate. So more for the discussion. Just a couple of points. We need to make the case for water sanitation and hygiene, but we all need to do a lot better, and this is where the research comes in delivering safe and sustainable services and ensuring that progress is equitable. We need to focus not just on what works and then replicating it. We need to understand what works where and why, and then look at the systems for adaptation. You can't simply take something that works in a village in Bangladesh and transplant it into a village in Uganda. And let's not, and Conor, I think, touched on this, research alone does not change the world. This is a map of London in the 19th century, compiled by John Snow, and was one of the most elegant applications of science to the challenges of identifying the causes of health problems. But it took 50 years to see any significant effect on child mortality. 1840, when John Snow was taking the global health community sort of light years ahead of where it had been in terms of the science, but it was only really in 1895, 1900, that we see this unprecedented drop in child mortality, 30% in a decade. And what happened here was a lot of the things that Conall was talking about. We had political will, we had politicians, we had economists articulating the case in terms of industrial productivity. We had religious groups, we had civil society, and of course we had academics. Oh. And then finally, let us not forget that sanitation is transformative. This is a wonderful quotation. Last time I was here, I managed to dig this out on Google. That's Rudyard Kipling, if you don't recognise him. But he used to, you know, he'd been all over the place, spent a lot of time in the subcontinent in India, and he used to be appalled by the sanitary conditions of Indian cities, and he used to lobby the municipal authorities. He did it in Lucknow, he did it in Delhi, he did it in Mumbai. But he also came to Dublin, which he described as a miserable point in his life. And when he was here, he wrote various letters to his family, and this was an extract for one of them. The river Liffey is a rich, pure, black, stone-faced sewer. Really, the dirt and slop and the general shiftlessness of Dublin beats belief. And I'm very pleased to say that I've had a very different impression the two times that I've visited. And although probably not exclusively, sanitation certainly played a large part in that. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed, Ollie. I'm actually going to hold off on the questions because I know we're conscious of time and we want to get some degree of dialogue. Just that.